Fuck.
Hi.
Hey.
What's happening?
Not much. Sitting in a closet with you.
Indeed.
Yes. Hopefully, in a couple months, it'll be in an actual, like, a room made for podcasting.
Well, it'll still be a closet.
It'll be a closet. It's not going to be, like, a big room or anything. But, yeah, man, the house stuff. There's a lot of house stuff. There's a lot of signing, and there's a lot of, like, oh, you want this many thousands of dollars for a thing I've never heard of? Oh, I guess I have to do that.
Just a lot of signing papers for things we don't understand and being told we need to buy this thing that's so much, it's so much money.
It's just like, it's a lot of just kind of shrugging your shoulders and being like, I guess this is how this works. We've never done this before.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the most money we've ever spent in our whole lives.
Oh, by far.
And, like, we just don't understand any step of the process. It's just like, all right, I trust these people know what they're talking about, so I'll just sign this. And
lawyers and real estate agents, and it's just
inspectors,
like... Inspectors. Well, and the crazy appraisers. Thing is, welcome to our Buying a House podcast, but it's basically taken up a bunch of our mental real estate lately. I didn't realize that before you're closed on a house, you're throwing money at things for, like, oh, the septic tank inspection, mm-hmm. or this normal, like, the whole house inspection, or these lawyer fees for title searches and all this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know what the title search is. All the inspection stuff, I get it. I mean, these are experts that are coming in and telling, and, like, ultimately, it could save you money in the long run if they're going to tell us something that's really needs fixing that the current homeowners have to fix. But, like, that stuff makes sense to me. That's just what that costs. But it's like, okay, now I have to pay the lawyer for, I don't know what a title search is. I don't know what all these papers we're signing are. I don't know. It all seems like the same shit over and over again, but it's all different.
Well, it does. But here's the crazy thing about that stuff that I was bringing up is that, like, you're not guaranteed the house. You could spend thousands and thousands of dollars getting all these title searches, getting these inspections and stuff like that. And then unless you're closed, which you do this before you're closed, it's just like, well, on to the next one, and then do it all again and hope you get that house.
Yeah.
It's, I wouldn't say that we're in, like, a whole nightmare situation. Like, I've heard people have really rough, mm-hmm. you know, years-long house searches and stuff. But, like, if we found out that we didn't get it or something now and we've already put a bunch of money into it, it would be like, what the fuck? Like,
right. But at a certain point, too, it's like, well, what can you do? You know what I mean? It's like, I guess
that's how this works.
Just, yeah, this is just something that happens, and you go and buying a home knowing that there's going to be a lot of money spent. I mean, we were originally intending to purchase a house that my mom was selling that used to belong to my grandmother, and so we did the inspection for that. But it turns out we would have to, like, kind of build a whole new house,
basically wrecking ball to it.
Yeah, we were ready for that. But you know, that's, you know, $600 for the inspection right there. You know, money for the lawyer as well. It's just, you kind of have to just be like, well, I guess that's just what this stuff costs. And, you know, try to derive some value from it beyond what the face value is. And in that, it's kind of a learning experience as well. And next time down the road when we do something like this, we'll be more familiar and prepared for it.
Yeah, like the amount of terms and things that I've never heard in my life where it's just like wide plank laminate flooring and stuff.
Or, well,
like,
all that stuff is the fun stuff.
I guess that's the fun stuff. But, like, during the inspection, I'm walking around with a guy and there's just like 19 things in the basement that I'm just like, like... I feel like such an idiot, and I feel like I have to tell all these people that I'm an idiot just so they're not surprised when I say stupid things. Because this guy pointed at something in the inspection the other day, and he was like, oh, well, this is great. So this basement's got a HVAC flippy flop. And I'm just like looking at, like, and he's talking about it and looking at me like, mm-hmm. I know what an HVAC flippy flop hosey hose is or whatever the hell it was. And I'm just kind of nodding. And after he gave me the whole thing, I was just like, I have to be completely honest with you. I pointed at it. I was like, I don't know what that thing is. And he's like, oh, okay. It's this. And then I find myself asking these questions like, you know, where, oh, okay, it uses well water and not city water. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, well water. Because I'm dumb, but I'm not so dumb that I think that, like, we literally have to, like, bring buckets to a well and, like, get it out of a well. But, like, that's what I know a well is.
Right.
But outside of that, I don't know what he's talking about. So he's like, oh, well, it's underground. And so I'm asking questions like, so... is it rainwater that we're drinking and showering in? And he's telling me about, like, underwater lakes and stuff. And I was like, fuck, I had no idea that was even a thing.
Yeah, the thing that surprised me most was, like, one of the things in the house was this it has, like, generator hookups. And, you know, obviously I know what a generator is. I remember when Hurricane Sandy happened and everyone lost power, there's this fervor for generators. But I didn't know that your house has to be, like, ready-made for a generator. And I was also confused, too, because it's like, well, all right, I get generators, but, like, you don't really need a generator. How long is your power actually going to be out? But then I realized, like, they told me, because it's well water, that means that you need to have, like, the electricity powers the pump to get the water. So if we lose electricity, we won't be able to flush the toilet. If we're out of electricity for days, then we wouldn't be able to flush the toilet unless we have a generator. So it's
I'm also going to be afraid to touch anything, because as he was talking about that generator thing with a switch, he's like, all right, so this, it's going to be up here, but then if you want to switch to the generator, do this, because if you don't do this, the electricity, like, feeds in reverse, and it just sounds like the whole house is basically just electrified, and you die probably. I don't know. Like, it just fries everything, and you have to pay $20,000.
Yeah, that's what's way easier about renting, is just like, all right, you give money. It's like it's sleeping in a hotel. You pay for the days you're there.
Isn't working. Can you send a guy up?
Yeah, it's just everything is just, something goes wrong, something's weird. You don't have to understand it. You just have to call the guy to fix it.
Yeah, and like this house has a fireplace, but it's got one of those like things where it's like a fake thing, and it's like real fire, but you kind of like flip a thing. But he's like, so this is the pilot light, and you can leave this on all the time. And I'm thinking like, wait, that tiny little flame, we can just leave that all the time, like while we're asleep? That's okay? And he's like, oh yeah, just turn it on, the gas will come out, and just bring a match down there to kind of light the thing. I was like, I'm going to blow up this house accidentally. Like, I'm going to be afraid to do anything. I'm not going to want to run the dishwasher, you know?
Yeah, I'd really like to change that so we could just like flip a switch to make the fire go up, you know what I mean?
I think that's kind of what he was saying that we could do. As long as the pilot light's lit, we can do that. But I think if we turn the pilot light off, like for the winter when we're not going to use it, I think we have to, like, bring up.
The other thing they were talking about that mystified me was, like, there are a few of the what we're describing sounds like the house is a total shack, but it's in fantastic condition.
Yeah.
But some of the doors don't close all the way. Some of the doors are, like, misaligned, or they just won't close the way. There'll be big gaps between the door frame and the door. And apparently, like, the house can settle, and that's what does that even mean, the house settles? And why would that make it so the doors aren't aligned?
Yeah, and learning about, like, grading and, like, water will go down here, and you want to make sure there's flues to make sure the water goes away from the house. Otherwise, it'll get down into the concrete.
It's just one of those things that's, you know, we don't have any familiarity with any of this stuff, and suddenly it's being thrust into our faces.
And we're being asked, understandably, like, no one's, like, doing this to us, you know? It's like, oh, well, yeah, you got to spend all this money. It's like, I'm spending a lot of money on something I do not understand at all.
I'm finding solace in is the fact that there are people out there that do this stuff for a living that know way more than us. And I find comfort knowing that we could always call on those people. But then the other side of the coin is like, well, because we don't know much, we're in a good position to be taken advantage of by a lot of these people, too. So it's...
But we're doing our due diligence and doing research and like going off recommendations and referrals and stuff like that. So I'm confident we're doing it all right. And ultimately, it's all good problems. I say problems in air quotes because like it's a good spot to be able to get a house.
And we were lucky enough to have our offer accepted, which right now, if anyone isn't familiar with the real estate market right now, it's just crazy because people are moving out of big cities and moving into the suburbs, and every house is like, you can't lowball anything. It's all everything's being scooped up at higher than asking price. So we were really surprised when our initial offer got accepted.
Which was, you know, higher than, you
thanks
know,
in no small
listed.
Part to our bulldog of a real estate agent.
Yeah, it's just a whole thing, and you'll probably get updates on this podcast as we go through this, and we will have a new podcast zone in the near future. But it is kind of all consuming for us right now, this whole thing. So, we'll keep you updated on. Hopefully, come April, you're hearing the first podcast from the new Pizone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's exciting and terrifying and expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Or the first three words that came to mind. But you know what? This whole process is not our enemy.
That's right, Dan.
Yeah. Nailed it. It was sloppy.
That wasn't great.
No. I knew it wasn't good when I like decided to say it.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to do it somehow.
So who directed Enemy, Dan?
Oh, well, I can confidently say it's Denis Villeneuve. Is that close? Denis Villeneuve.
The pronunciation I read was Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve?
Yeah.
Can we say Dennis? Is that fair? Is that accepted?
I mean, we could say whatever we want to say.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to stick with Denis Villeneuve.
I just like Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve. Okay, Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Denis Villeneuve. Which, okay, so we have kind of figured out over the last few years that wait, is he one of our favorite directors? And I think the answer is yes.
He keeps directing really good stuff. And I want to go through his back catalog and just watch everything that I haven't seen.
Yeah. Namely, so we saw Blade Runner 2049 first, mm-hmm. and we really enjoyed that. That was a great follow-up.
Wait, didn't we watch Arrival first?
It was right around the same time as when we were living in New York City.
Yeah.
But yeah, Arrival was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Blade Runner was really good. And we recently watched Sicario, mm-hmm. and that was awesome too. And the thing is, these are very different movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a sci-fi epic. You've got just kind of like a hardcore drug cartel thing going on, and then an alien mm-hmm. tale. And then, so we heard it was actually a guy named Gon Smith in our Discord is the one who recommended this because we were just kind of chatting on the Discord and the Pain in the Stream channel about Denis Villeneuve, and he was like, "Oh yeah, Enemy. Enemy's one of my favorites." I was like, "Oh, I've never even heard of that."
Yeah.
It's 2013. Jake Gyllenhaal playing two characters, which mm-hmm. we will definitely cover here. And so, thank you to Gon Smith for the recommendation. And this is another. It's not like any of the other Villeneuve stuff that we've watched.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Very different, and it's going to be weird to talk about, I think, because it's, I don't know if we understand it.
Well, if there was one common denominator between all his films, I think, and granted, I haven't seen all his films, but of the ones I've seen, there always seems to be careful attention paid to the main character's internal conflict, and it is especially the case in Enemy, because that's just that blown up into an entire film. It's
yeah.
But
through metaphor, maybe? Question mark?
Like, well, I mean, a lot of literal struggles. I mean, this guy is literally confronting himself. Literally confronting himself. But, okay, so this movie is it's one of those movies that has a ton of symbolism. And if you just watch it and just take what is being presented to you at face value, it probably won't have as much of an impact or be satisfying, because it doesn't end in a satisfying way. It ends in a really bizarre way.
Well, you know what? You know who we should have had watch this? I bet my dad would have really enjoyed and had a lot of...
This screams Paul Reichert.
It screams like top type of thing he would hate.
He would mainly be hung up on the fact that Jake Gyllenhaal, one of the most handsome people on earth, is having sex with a gorgeous blonde lady.
He would have been obsessed with the wife and the girlfriend. Yes, 1,000% you're correct. Yes.
Yeah. So, Jake Gyllenhaal plays two characters here who it's unclear if they are separate entities or if it's the same guy.
Right. The names are Adam Bell, who is a teacher.
A history teacher at a college.
And Anthony Clare, who is an actor, whose stage name is Daniel St. Clair, who for a while here, I kind of wondered if there was going to be a third one, because there was kind of that like, oh, well, the male said Daniel St. Clair, but he's going by Anthony. I was like, wait, is there going to be some weird thing? The whole like first half of this movie, I kept wondering like, okay, what's the Shyamalan twist thing at the end? Is this some government clone project thing going on? Like, I was kind of bracing for it to be kind of a lame explanation of mm-hmm. like, oh, it's this, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, it's this, we're going to storm the place and get the secrets. We found a computer that explained the project or whatever, the cloning thing.
Isn't that kind of movie
it's
at all.
Not that at all. We'll get to the ending in a bit, but it is not that.
Yeah, so the first scene, which is a scene that the very first opening scene is kind of disparate from what happens for the entirety of the movie that follows until the very end. So the opening scene is Jake Gyllenhaal, unclear if it's Adam Bell or Anthony Clare.
Yes.
But keep in mind, as a viewer, you don't know about Anthony Clare until a little further.
He hasn't said a word. You haven't heard a name.
Right,
it's
right.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
This is just, in retrospect, I can't say with certainty if it's one or the other. But it's at some kind of weird underground
like sex club thing.
Sex club. There's like this girl seems like she's masturbating in front of the crowd. And then this other woman who's in stilettos. I think she's naked, just wearing stilettos.
Yeah.
There's this big old like tarantula or some kind
they
of
bring
big
it out on
spider.
Like one of those like dinner tray things or whatever. It's a whole weird. It's a weird start to a movie.
It is weird, and she I guess steps on the spider. It's like, and I was kind of disturbed because, you know, I have a high tolerance for weird, horrifying stuff, but the whole like crushing thing, I can't even think about it because it just makes me so angry and upset.
Right.
The fact that people would derive sexual pleasure from tiny helpless creatures being stepped on by women in heels. It's just fucking jerk off. Like, you don't have to have something doesn't have to die.
I realized that was like, I thought that was some weird metaphorical thing or something. I didn't realize that is like a full on like fetish thing.
Oh, it is. Yeah. And I kind of thought the movie was going to feature more of that. So I was like, oh, I hope this isn't the case. And if they're going to step on anything, I hope it's just bugs. I mean, no offense to bugs. I'd rather them not step on anything.
We've got a lot of bugs listening.
But I'd rather them step on bugs than like puppies, which is unfortunately what some people do, which I've heard about.
That's fucking horrible.
Yeah, horrifying. At any rate, yeah, so that happens. And then it's just like we're just kind of thrown into this guy's everyday life, which seems just absolutely miserable. He seems very depressed.
The teacher, right?
Adam Bell. Yeah. He's just goes, you know, through the motions at school, just saying, obviously, he knows a lot about this dictatorship stuff. And, you know, based on the curriculum and the quote at the beginning of the movie, which was like
chaos
is order not yet deciphered.
Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to find how his teachings are manifesting in the plot, because I figured there has to be some connection that way, because they let him they let that scene have so much of the curriculum in it. Like, they let him talk at length about the dictatorship stuff. So it made me feel like, okay, this has something to do with the plot. It's not completely just, you know, flavor for his everyday life.
Yeah, and he's talking about things like events repeating themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think they actually play that dialogue again, or I don't know if it's him at a different class doing it again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, is this going to be one of those weird, like, Looper, Groundhog Day type mm-hmm. things where it's like,
I kind of thought that as well. Yeah, I suspected that as well at the beginning. Especially since the girlfriend comes back again, and it's like the same thing. Like they start having sex, and then she just leaves abruptly.
Yeah.
What she didn't just leave abruptly. She was like sleeping, and then he went on her, and it was just like, of course she'd be upset about that. That was horrible. Initially I was like, okay, is this gonna be like a Groundhog Day type of thing?
Yeah.
But it's not a Groundhog Day type of thing in the sense that time is like the day is literally repeating. But that kind of theme is present in the fact that there's a repetition of himself, of Adam Bell himself. There's literally another Adam Bell out there that he sees when he watches this movie called
Where There's a Will, There's a Way.
Where There's a Will, There's a Way.
Yeah.
He's watching it on in the most sad setup ever. Like, Dan and I were watching this. We have, like, the living room, which is, like, mainly where I play video games. It's so comfy. We got this reclining couch, we've got a big ass TV, you know, two dogs, just a comfy, perfect movie watching situation. And he's on this like wheelie computer chair watching this DVD on his laptop. It's just, nothing screams sad situation more than watching a shitty movie on a laptop on a wheelie chair.
I am surprised at the amount that I've heard people refer to like watching movies on their laptop. And I'm always like, the only context I would want to watch a movie on a laptop is like I'm on a plane. And like that's, you know, I don't know if there's going to be like a seat back thing or something.
You know what's weird? I think it's just now that I've been so spoiled by the current situation, I can't even fathom it. But back in the day, like I remember being at college and I had an iPad. I don't know if an iPod. I don't know if anyone remembers
iPods. Oh, the video iPod stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. And I would literally watch new episodes. And I was a big Game of Thrones fan. I was watching new episodes of Game of Thrones on my iPod in between classes at college.
Wow.
So, and Dexter. And yeah.
People do that on phones all the time is the thing. It's and that's why everyone, you know, Netflix, Hulu, all this stuff, you know, they've got download features. Mm-hmm. And like, I'll be honest, I've used it a few times. Like, we're not, like, against this by any means, even though, like, some directors get very, like, I think David Lynch is one mm-hmm. where he's like, hey, don't watch it on your fucking phone. But I remember when we were watching the first season of The Mandalorian, I was flying around a bit, and I downloaded a few episodes. And, like, it's nice to have the access or whatever. But, like, when we lived in Manhattan and I was riding the subway and stuff frequently, I tried to kind of get in there. I forgot. I think we were watching Terrace House, actually. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to watch some on the subway. And it's like, okay, well, I've got, like, 20 minutes on the subway here and there. It's just not comfortable or conducive for me to like, I like to sit down and really get wrapped up in something and pay attention to it. And like on the subway, when you're like looking up to check your stop, you know, somebody's coming in being crazy or something, you know, it's just like, it just takes you out of it. And I eventually was like, I'll just listen to podcasts or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. And two, I would feel like, okay, I don't want anyone to know what I'm watching or judge me for what I'm watching or anything.
Yeah, there's like a sex scene or something comes up, yeah. And it's just like, man, people are going to wonder why I'm watching this on a train, you know?
Can I tell a David Lynch anecdote?
Yes.
This has nothing to do with anything other than you just mentioned David Lynch. I used to work at the David Lynch Foundation, which is his nonprofit about transcendental meditation.
Sure.
And I got to meet him, and he was a nice guy. You wouldn't expect him to be such a little old man. He's a little old man, and he's obviously brilliant. He's one of my favorite directors. We all went to this like Ayurvedic Indian vegan restaurant because, you know, it was a very hippy-dippy crowd. This is TM we're talking about here.
Sure.
And he was, you know, presenting in front of everyone, talking about what TM meant to him. And he was talking about when he
transcendental meditation.
Yeah, when he first met Bob Roth, I don't remember if he's founder or CEO of
Aaron, out some names here.
No. He's a well-known, famous figure. And I'm not Bob is an amazing guy. He's truly one of the best, most kind-hearted people I've ever met. But David Lynch was talking about how when he first saw Bob and learned about TM and stuff, and he saw this group of wealthy people, just a group of insanely wealthy people that would just follow Bob Roth around. And they were called like the 108s or something like that, the 109s. And everyone was just like, accepted that. Like, oh, okay, there's this group of really rich older people that follow this guy around. And I was thinking to myself, what? Like, I wanted to stop and ask, like, what? Can you elaborate?
Follow him around, like familiars? Like, literally, like, walk behind
like
them?
Yeah, familiars. Or... Yeah, like, they would just follow him all around the country while he would, spread the word of TM.
Did they have jobs, or was that their job to just...
I don't know if they had enough wealth that they were just able to just follow this guy around.
Man, if I ever got, like, super wealthy, I don't know if I would just, like, follow a dude around.
Yeah.
I'd want to do my own stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was back in the day, too, when I think TM was, like, kind of first... becoming more known in the United States, so maybe, and I know like wealthy people who don't have the burdens of everyday life to worry about might look inward for improvement or whatever.
Yeah, it's like this guru type character.
It's just so confused. And David Lynch didn't even make a joke about it or anything. Like, and everyone was just watching him. And
this
I was
seems
just
normal.
Like, I looked around. I was like, did you hear what he said?
Well, I mean, also like David Lynch has been in, you know, Hollywood for so long, and like even though he's like kind of seems like a weird
That's
outsider
really
type,
good point.
He's
yeah.
probably not, he's his sense of what's normal behavior is probably so skewed, but yeah. Hollywood's just fucked, you know?
Yeah, I made him laugh.
You made David Lynch laugh?
Yeah, I did, because he was going around the office. This was later. He was going around the office asking everyone what they did. And, you know, at the time, like, I started at the front desk as, like, a receptionist, and at this point, I was, like, kind of an assistant for all the departments or whatever. And he asked me what I did, and I was like, I do everything no one else wants to do. And
yeah.
I made him laugh. And oh. I made my boss mad about it. But
really?
That's okay.
Yeah, it sounded like a real fun place to work. While
yeah.
You were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned David Lynch. I actually did see, when I was reading about this movie before we decided to watch it, I did see that this had some comparisons to Lynch. And honestly, I could kind of see it.
Yeah, I could see it. I feel like if it was more Lynchy, it might have more like non sequiturs in it. I feel like that's kind of a
sure.
trademark of his. Just like absurd levels of weirdness that's like immediately stopped and no one acknowledges. Just kind of like an encapsulation of what I just talked about with the 108s or whatever they were called.
Well, I mean, there were parts where it would just like, you know, a character would go to sleep and we'd see, you know, what we assume to be a dream where it's like, oh, it's the naked lady walking, but she's got a bug head and she's upside down. Or like there's a giant spider attacking the city or walking over the city.
Yeah. So the spider that we're first introduced to in the opening scene that I referenced earlier, the spiders are like a recurring theme throughout this movie.
Yes.
And I have since read about this movie, and there's a connection between the symbolism. The spiders are supposed to represent women. And when I learned that, that didn't really resolve any of the questions that I had
sure.
in my plot. So that's why I'm not hesitating to share that with you, because in my mind, that didn't really punctuate anything for me. That was just like, all right, the spiders represent women. Okay. Yeah.
I'd not read that, and I've seen the movie, obviously, and like I'm thinking about it, and I was like, I don't get it really. Like, honestly, this is just one of those movies that ended, and I was like, I don't know what the fuck any of that was about. You know, like, let's just talk about the ending here, because let's kind of talk about just the basic gist of what's going on here. So the most invested I was in this was at the beginning, when he watches that movie where there's the will, there's a way. We really sidetracked there. But yes, back to the movie and the laptop on the chair. And there's just this bellhop actor, this extra, and it looks exactly like him.
Like, it literally, like, exactly. It's not like it kind of looks like him, it exactly looks like
Yeah,
him.
And I was so intrigued by that premise of, like, just imagine that. Like, imagine we were watching a movie for this podcast or something, and it's like, oh, it's you, you know? That would be the craziest thing. And you would, like, they'd show him searching online and looking up the guys in the credits and Googling him, finding his, like, acting page and all that stuff. And I was so, so intrigued about, like, oh, where is this going to go with this? Like, who is he? Are they brothers? Is this, you know, I don't know if it's, like, a clone thing or something. But as the movie kept going on, I kind of just kind of started getting that sense where it's like, I don't think I'm going to get a real answer to this. Because especially at one point, we paused to go to the bathroom or something, and there was like 13 minutes left. And like, we had zero answers. And I was like, all right, I don't think we're getting the storm in the castle. Let's figure out why this is happening.
Right. Yeah. That was, I was very interested at that point, too. I kind of hoped it was going the direction of like an internet mystery, because I love internet mysteries. I told you this already.
Like Reply All, it's the podcast, that type of thing. Right?
Yeah. Like finding this anomaly that on the internet that you just go down a rabbit hole, but it leaves that avenue pretty quickly, and he ends up contacting his lookalike, and you know, his girlfriend, or his lookalike, who is Anthony Clare, his wife, who's very pregnant, ends up going to see Adam Bell at his office, and you know, is shocked that he looks exactly like him. So at this point in the movie, we don't know what the deal is. As far as it's presented, there's two guys that just look exactly the same, different names, different lives. But the one thing that stuck out in my mind was, other than that point in which they're in the hotel room together, Anthony and Adam, they're never both together with someone else present. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I did find myself constantly thinking about, like, okay, is this going to be a Fight Club thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this, you know, spoilers for Fight Club, if you somehow don't know this, but it is, yeah, Tyler Durden and the Edward Norton character are the same thing. So I was constantly thinking, like, okay, are we doing this thing again? Because I feel like it was pretty novel when Fight Club came out, but there have been enough things where it's like, oh, the bad guy and the main guy are the same dude.
Right.
You know, it's, I don't know. I was kind of hoping it wouldn't be as simple as that.
Right, right. And it isn't as simple as that. He visits his mom, played by Isabel Rossellini, speaking of David Lynch.
What's she in? Because I actually wrote this down, because I've always heard her name, and I've heard her name kind of said in reverence, and like, she's this, you know, very famous established actor, but like, I don't know anything she's in.
Yeah, she's in Blue Velvet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's been in a lot of stuff. If she's in something, it's usually kind of like a seal of quality, like the
RT
Nintendo seal
or,
of quality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. But yeah, she's in Blue Velvet. That's what I know her, what I recognize her most from.
Got it.
And his mom is saying, you know, she mentions, like, because he's telling her about how he has this doppelganger and he's really confused by it. And, like, you know, maybe this scene kind of served to dispel the idea that maybe his mom had twins and he didn't know about his twin brother. Because she says she only had one son. And then she also mentions how she wishes he would give up that, like, movie acting aspirations.
Yeah, but also says something about, like, oh, you hate blueberries.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was a scene earlier where, like, the actor, you know, version was, like, making a blueberry smoothie and stuff. And, like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, what are we trying to say here, you know?
And she also alludes to him not really being able to commit to a woman, suggesting that he's, you know, has a history of being adulterous.
Right.
So when she said the thing about his acting career, for me, the Anthony and Adam kind of then shifted into being one person. And maybe they're just, it's like a division of two people, of one person into two different people. But it seems like the movie is heavily implying that they are the same person.
Yeah. And then when she talks about him not being able to stick with the same woman, you think back to, like, oh, there was a part where the actor, Anthony, was on the phone and his wife was like, oh, hey, is it her again? Are you talking to her again? And then it's like, okay, is this a weird thing where it's this dual thing where it's like, okay, the one we see with this girlfriend is, like, the mistress or whatever, but the wife, like, he's cheating or something. And, like, I do think that is kind of what was implied there,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And then when we get towards the end, when Dan and I paused and we saw there's 30 minutes, and we're like, what the fuck's going to happen?
Yeah, there's going to be 5 minutes credits. We're not getting an answer here.
Yeah, so at that point in the movie, Anthony had kind of blackmailed Adam into letting him take his girlfriend, Adam's girlfriend, out for like a romantic night. He wanted to sleep with his girlfriend. And then meanwhile, obviously, Adam would then have time with Anthony's wife, his very pregnant wife. And Anthony and Adam's girlfriend, you know, get it on in the hotel room and they're heading home. And then they get into a car crash.
She does freak out about the wedding ring.
Right. Yeah.
Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. The mark from the wedding ring. Because I guess if it's like a tan line or a mark or something like that. So they get into a car accident and it's we learn that he perished. But am I wrong in remembering that in the radio, like they're listening to the radio the next day at home, like Adam and Anthony's wife are like playing radio and they kind of stop it at a certain point, but it's talking about an accident that happened and one person perished.
I don't remember.
Yeah, well, at any rate, they died. And it was kind of like, for me, it's kind of like a Deus Ex Machina kind of thing where it's just out of nowhere. Okay, there's a car accident, so that's going to prevent any further confrontation between the two. But then if there was just the one guy, then it would make more sense that, like, okay, maybe he was with the girlfriend and then left before her or whatever. But then I realized, like, in trying to put these pieces together, that that's probably not what the movie wants me to do at all.
Yeah, maybe we're trying to get too, like, literal with it.
Exactly. You know, yeah, like, exactly. And when you consider how it wraps up, which, if you want to talk about how it wraps up, I think that really puts the nail in the coffin that, like, this is not a movie where the pieces are supposed to fit perfectly together.
I think it's very just metaphorical and art. I think thinking literally with this movie just doesn't really work because of how ludicrous the ending is, which is basically he opens this letter, Adam does, that is a letter that he's been carrying around the whole time that's addressed to Anthony. And it turns out it's like an invitation and a key back to that underground sex club thing. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of thought at this point, like, do we have enough time for a scene where he goes there and we figure out what this place is and what it represents or if it explains the two versions or whatever? Mm-hmm. But no. He basically says, like, he gets the invitation, he knows what it is, and he's like, okay, honey, I have to go out tonight. I'm going to be out tonight. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into a room when she doesn't respond, and she's just a giant spider.
Giant spider.
And it, like, recoils.
Yeah, scared spider.
Yeah, and backs up into a corner, credits. I mean, is that supposed to be a thing? If the spider represents her, that she's like... scared of what he's become because he's embraced this new persona and he's ready to go to this like dark club thing. And I'm just thinking out loud and I don't think anything makes sense to me.
Yeah, there's a lot that's been lost on me. And even in trying to research this movie, I've failed to come up with an explanation that clicks for me.
Yeah.
And the thing that eludes me the most is trying to figure out where his lectures on dictatorship fit into all of this. Like, the symbolism, okay, I get it. I mean, obviously, that's pretty persistent throughout the movie, because the spider is almost always presented with a woman. And, you know, it's replacing the woman, it's replacing the woman's head, the woman is stepping on the spider. I mean, with the exception of the one scene in which there's a giant spider kind of like Cloverfield style walking around the city. And that, I think that kind of starts to make the connection again to the dictatorships kind of stuff, but it still is lost on me how that's supposed to fit in. And, it's frustrating for me when I watch something and I just feel like, I guess I'm just too stupid to fully comprehend what's going on here. You know what I mean? But then also at a certain point, is it kind of the fault of the writing or the direction that I'm not able to confidently kind of parse what's going on.
I know. Whenever something like that happens, it always brings me back to being in like film school and college. And it's just like when you would see these like student films that were just very abstract and it's, oh, but it's got a message and stuff. And it always rubbed me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of pretension back then. This is a little different. You know, I kind of do have that knee jerk, like, oh, God, none of this made sense thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I wasn't bored. You know, it's directed really well. The performances are good. I was intrigued throughout. It just didn't pay off at the end. So it didn't feel like an hour and a half of nonsense to me. It felt like an hour and a half of like, ooh, where's this going? And then at the end, I was like, oh, I guess nowhere, you know, and I don't get it.
It does build the tension up. Like, the tension is percolating throughout the whole thing. So it's not like at any point I was bored watching it.
No.
It just kind of wrapped up really strangely. But yeah, if you look at it in its totality, like all the details do suggest that like, okay, so Adam lives in this really shitty apartment with no furniture. It's kind of like the kind of place that you would have on the side if you need a place to shack up with your side
lady.
Sure, yeah. He is a teacher and by day, and it's unclear what Anthony does during the day because he's an actor. Like, he kind of has all this free time that you could fit a teacher's schedule or a professor's schedule into. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like, all these pieces kind of fit together. And the fact that, you know, they're never seen both together by a third party. Like, when Anthony's wife goes to see Adam Bell at the school, at the university.
Yeah.
As soon as Adam is out of sight and behind the wall is when Anthony picks up his phone while she's calling.
That's a good point.
You know
it's
what
like
I mean?
Immediately once he's out of sight. And
And an interesting thing that I read that I never would have picked up this detail myself, but, you know, I looked up information on this movie. Adam and Anthony both have that scar on their rib.
Yeah.
I have to say that I read about this elsewhere because I never would have come up with this myself.
Is this an Adam and Eve thing?
Exactly, because Eve is born from the rib of Adam or whatever. So another connection to, you know, women and stuff like that. But it's a weird movie for sure. It's very weird and very tense. And Jake Gyllenhaal was incredible in it. I mean,
oh, he's awesome.
He plays two different characters that are the same characters.
But subtly, like the way he plays them is like the actor's a little more kind of shitty and forward and stuff, and Adam's a little more, you know, like unsure of himself and stuff.
Yeah, but not over the top. And let me just shout out to Gyllenhaal too for he was in Nightcrawler, which is another movie where he plays kind of a creepy guy. That movie's so fucking good. If you haven't seen Nightcrawler,
we're gonna talk about that.
It's got to be streaming somewhere. If you're listening to it and you've ever thought of watching it, I highly recommend it. It's so dark, so fucking dark.
Cool.
And it's kind of like voyeuristic. It's a movie for the internet age for sure, even though it doesn't delve into internet stuff literally at all. But it's very interesting.
Nice. Check that out, folks.
Yeah, I think you would really like it, too.
I should check it out. I've heard you speak fondly about it for a while. You know, it's funny, you were talking about that rib thing, and I didn't even think about that Adam and Eve rib thing. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, I don't think I realized all the spiders were supposed to be women and that it was trying to say a whole thing about that. But I was looking at the cast list here and the characters, and I was like, wait, his name's Adam. Is there a character named Eve? Is it that, you know, like blatant about it? Mm-hmm. And there is an uncredited Jane Moffat as Eve, uncredited. I wonder if that was like one of the women or something
at the
beginning.
Like, spider crushing
ladies. Yeah. Which again, even if it is, fuck if I know what that means.
Known. Yeah. And she wouldn't have been named at all in the movie. So.
Yeah. It's like, kind of reminds me when I saw Mother. I mean, you watch that on a plane, and it's like...
Well, Mother was way more obvious to me. I mean, that was much more blatant symbolism.
But that's what I'm saying about myself, is I watched it, and it's like, I was able to enjoy it just because it's like, whoa, crazy, weird stuff's happening with this house. And I didn't, after the fact, like, it didn't bother me at the end, even though it was a bunch of weird shit. And then you told me, like, oh, it's got this Bible stuff going on. I was like, oh, shit, that didn't even occur to me.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, like, nothing occurred to me, and I also just didn't really, by the end, I wasn't as into it just because I feel like it was unsatisfying, where, like, Mother was satisfying.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, I'm not familiar with, like, Catholic or Christian theology or whatever, but, like, Mother was just, like, Mother Earth, you know what I mean? The house was Earth, and you know, obviously, not obvious, but Javier Bardem was more of like a Christ-like figure.
Yeah, I literally went to Catholic school. I've spent hundreds of hours in Mass, and it was just straight over my dumb head.
Well, that's one of those things that, like, once you realize that, everything you're seeing in the movie kind of clicks.
Sure.
Whereas
sure.
This, like, I had to search out research and essays on this movie, and even then, it still isn't clicking for me. So in that respect, it's not satisfying, but the experience of watching it was still a lot of fun.
That's the thing. I'm like, when we talk about it, I'm kind of down on it, and I don't think it delivered for me. But also, I liked watching it, so yeah. I'm not overall. I liked this movie, mm-hmm. even if it didn't make any sense to me or deliver at the end. You know.
And this was one of his Denis Villeneuve's earlier movies too. Yeah. So it just shows how much balls this guy has to do something so surreal for, you know, maybe like one of his first big opportunities with Jake Gyllenhaal's a, you know, A-list actor, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, I didn't expect it to be so abstract and weird because, like, you know, he's a pretty artsy, awesome director, you know, with the stuff he's done. But I feel like it's always pretty straightforward with what's going on here. It's like aliens, future stuff, you know, Mexico.
I remember when we watched Blade Runner 2049 and you didn't realize that Kay died at the end.
No, not at all. I remember we were like walking home, or I can't remember if it was that night. Yeah, I think we were walking home, and you were like, "Oh yeah, I love that scene, you know, where he died." And I was like, "What?"
Tears in the Rain is playing in the background, the same song that played during the Tears in the Rain speech in Blade Runner.
I am not observant, despite being a literal college-educated film major. Like, I don't see any. I have just one of those dumb literal brains, I think, you know.
It's so funny how that manifests in like so many respects of your life. Like even the food you eat, it's got to be this like loud, super flavorful food.
Yeah. Subtlety is not really my strong suit, I would say, or metaphor or abstraction or anything.
That's fine. That's fine.
It's served me fine. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with it either. I'm so grateful that you exist.
Oh, geez. I liked watching this movie.
Yeah, it was fun.
I continue to think Denis Villeneuve is. Hey, we'll see Dune. I'm excited about.
I'm so excited about Dune.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, that'll be it for Enemy. That is streaming on, it's on Hulu, and you got to have that like Showtime add-on thing. That's always weird. When you search for something, it's like, oh, it's on Hulu. And then it's mm-hmm. like, well, also sign into this thing. It's like, okay. But yeah, check it out if you want to.
We watched it on Fubo, right?
Fubo.
Fubo.
Fubo, yeah. Yes, but through Showtime, because our Fubo
had
a Showtime thing. So yeah, it's, ultimately, if you have Showtime, you have access to this. But yeah. I want to thank everyone of our Patreons.
Thank
of
you.
Our patrons on patreon.com/paintingthestream. Real simple $5 level. It's the only one we got. Ad-free shows.
Easy.
You get them early. You get them Saturday instead of Sunday.
Wow.
You got access to the Discord, which, by the way, 500 strong now. We got 500 folks in that Discord.
Way
it is
to
nice
go, people.
And active. We got Painting the Stream. Patron supporters. We got Twitch subscribers all in one fun little place for us all to chat in.
And everyone's so cool and nice.
It's just the best.
There's no one arguing about silly things. Everyone's
nope.
just cool.
It's positive. It's fun.
It's a positive place.
It is excellent. It is the like internet community I go to just like chat and share links
yeah.
and you know, just have fun.
We take all comers. And if you ever felt like you don't fit in somewhere else in the internet, come on over to Records Market. We got a place for you.
Yeah. It's very,
unless
very...
you're a shithead.
Yeah, unless you're a shithead, please don't come, because that's part of the reason it's great is because there's not shithead. But that's something you can get if you're a patron. And most importantly, if you're a patron, you get written for you by Bonk, your own. Bonk, who? Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we got?
His name, or her name, is Christian. Christian, thank you so much for supporting us on Panning the Stream Patreon. We sincerely appreciate it. And this Bonk, who, is for you. We were all crying when Christian fell to the floor and gave his last breath.
Why are they always dying or facing like Satan or death or...
That's just how I roll.
Oh, man. Well, Christian, I hope things are well. Christian, goodness gracious. I hope everything's all right. And thank you for becoming a patron. It makes me know that you're all right. So thanks for doing that. And Bonk, thank you for that lovely Bonku.
Of course, my love.
Yes. We'll do a Hugh game card here for one last question before we go. Question for me and Bonk. The Hugh game question is, would you say the people you get along with best share your sense of humor?
Absolutely.
I would say so. That's like...
That's fundamental.
I think like outside of just like not being a bad person, mm-hmm. that's like the most important thing for me.
Yeah.
Because like I've got friends that like they don't play games, or they're not into like, you know, the things I'm into like entertainment wise. Mm-hmm. But as long as we can make each other laugh and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, like that's the most important thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's paramount.
Yeah. That's like, you know, when you and I first started talking across the country after touching base on OKCupid, it's just like immediately I could tell like, oh my God, She's hilarious. And like, you're finding, you're laughing at the stuff I'm saying. It's text, so it's a lot of ha ha, lol, or whatever. But it's like, oh, well, that's the biggest indicator of chemistry, not just romantically, but also just as friends and things like that. Like, I'm trying to think of any friends of mine that I really like, the people I get along with best that don't share my sense of humor.
Yeah, I have a problem. Like, I feel like I'm always making jokes and stuff like that, just because even if I know the joke's not going to land, I feel like people generally appreciate the effort.
Yeah,
I feel like it's just like, well, you can't be a shitty, unapproachable person if you're trying to make everyone laugh all the time. You know what I mean?
Well, it always makes me laugh at family gatherings with my dad and the Reicherts, because my dad and I have the same sense of humor, but like, no one else in the family does. So I don't know how many hundreds of times we've been at like a Thanksgiving table or a Christmas table where my dad will make some really funny joke and literally like crickets, like it's not even crickets. They'll just keep talking about other stuff like he didn't even make the joke. And he'll just look at me and just throw up his hands like, guess not. Like, just...
Yeah, there's a whenever we play Jackbox with the Hannums, it's I always get that too, because it's like
my mom's side. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Dan's mom, Gary's stepdad, and his sisters are just the best people. Like, I really hit the sister-in-law jackpot and mother-in-law
awesome.
Jackpot. Just
They're
amazing
awesome.
People. But they just don't get my sense of humor at all.
They don't get mine. Well, Kayla and Katie are pretty close, my sisters, in terms of, like, they'll get it, and they're like, but it's not the same thing.
Right.
But it's like they could watch like Katie really likes Arrested Development. It's like, okay, well, there we go. And that's a start, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
and that's
something
I find really funny.
It's not that they don't have a sense of humor. They're constantly laughing and making jokes. But I guess like Jackbox is a good like distillation of that, because you are literally trying to make jokes. Like you're literally trying to make people laugh.
And it's,
you're
right. It's a really good measuring stick of just like, oh, do we have the same? Does the same stuff make us laugh?
Right.
I talked to my dad on the phone today, and he's repeated a quick joke from Norm that like me and him have repeated to each other a billion times and makes us crack up every time.
Which one is it?
It's really short. It's from Norm's YouTube show where he was doing the jokes where he reads like kind of headlines or dumb jokes or whatever. And he's just like, a new university study has determined that men with beards are more sexually attractive. More great work from the University of Bob Seger. It's the stupidest joke. But me and my dad just constantly say it to each other and makes us laugh. And he mentioned today that, like, if I told that to my sisters, they would just not even understand for a second, like, why that would be funny. It just would be, why is it funny? I don't know. Why would Bob Seger have a college? Well, that's why it's funny. By the way, he's just, like, dedicating his research to beards being sexy. Anywho.
By the way, on the topic of beards being sexy, I know you get flack for your enormous beard, but I think it's very sexy.
Well,
and
you.
Ultimately, my opinion should be the winning one here.
It's the entire reason I've let it grow out this much. You know, I get people, I constantly will be on like a Zoom call or something, and somebody will be like, what's the plan here? What are you doing with this? Like, Backlar will always give me shit too. And like, what's the plan here? Where are you going with this thing? Like, I don't know. Bonk likes it.
I love it.
I grow it out.
It's just nice to just imagine you as like playing bass in a doom metal band with a big old beard. Like, that's just.
I did that for years. I'm surprised that never came up. Yeah. That was throughout college. I was actually, playing the bottleneck all the time.
For a crowbar.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. Me and the crowbars. Dan Reichert and the crowbars. That's my doom metal.
It's funny.
All right, well.
That's what people say when a joke is funny. They say, haha, that's funny.
Oh, my God. Sorry, I know we're going on a lot of tangents this episode. I remember, it's probably like 2008, 2009, I was dating a girl, and briefly, because it's just like, again, we talk about the sense of humor, and it's like, she just was not funny at all. She was very, very nice and everything, but I remember we were watching Steve Colbert, the Colbert Report back in the day, and after every joke, she wouldn't laugh. She would just go like, Steve Colbert, you are a funny, funny man. And just every time, I was just like, what are you doing? Why are you saying that? Just laugh or don't laugh. Like, but if you say it like 12 times during an episode, what are you doing?
It's like that episode of Seinfeld where Jerry's dating a girl who just doesn't laugh.
Oh, weird.
And he's constantly trying to make her laugh because he's a comedian, obviously. And she doesn't. It's a really good show. If you've never seen or heard of Seinfeld, it's this little gem from the 90s and late 80s. I highly recommend streaming it. It's available on a variety of streaming platforms.
What is this character?
It's just my Seinfeld advocate character.
Oh, okay, that's fun. Yeah, that's a good one. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Get out of your hair or your ears, wherever you got us. I don't know why you're putting your earpods in your hair. That's a weird thing. How long can we drag? We're good at dragging out. All right. I'm going to horse blinders on.
It's
here we go.
The tantric sex of podcasts. That's, we're just going to drag out of that ending.
That's how we pitch panning the stream to Anchor. It's like, listen, it's the tantric sex of podcasts. You don't have to pitch an Anchor. You can just make a podcast.
Yeah. Anchor's great, by the way.
They are awesome. Yeah. They're great. All right. That's our podcast, Panning the Stream. That's the episode for Enemy. I'm Dan Reichard.
This
is Bonk Reichard. And we've enjoyed talking to microphones for you. Give us the 5 stars if you enjoy the podcast on the Apple Podcast or wherever you do your business. Subscribe, all that stuff. I usually don't say that. Thanks to Tom Manda for the theme song.
Thank you, Tommy.
That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. We thank you all for listening. Bonk, thanks to you for joining me each and every week. Dogs, thanks for being cool. And we'll see you all next week.
Dogs in socks. Dogs in socks.